This is Totes My New Faith, a weekly discussion of the things that we love. I'm Misha St. Clair.
And I'm Dylan Kenny.
Here we go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Totes My New Fave, the show where Misha St. Clair and myself, Dylan Kenny, talk about all the stuff that brought us joy this week. Misha, what's up, man? How you been?
Dylan, I am doing pretty well, man. How's it been for you?
It's been different this week. I want to start off actually today by thanking you and anybody who might have been looking forward to an episode last week. You would not have gotten me at my best on the day that we usually record, which tends to be Monday. But everything's okay, man. You know what I mean? Everyone in my world is safe, meaning physically at least. And we're going to push through because, you know, as you lived here, Las Vegas doesn't take crap from anybody.
That is true.
So we're moving forward, man. It's going to be okay, but we're definitely still healing. So thank you to everybody who understood and was patient enough to wait another week. It meant a lot to me that I have a friend like Misha who was able to put our hobby on hold for a week. And if you want to help out Las Vegas, the best thing you can do if you're listening is to come here. That's it. Come to Vegas, stay, eat overpriced food, go see a show. We'd love to have you.
Get drunk and see magic? That seems like a pretty cool way to help a place out.
So thank you, buddy. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no worries, man.
But that means that for 2 weeks, I haven't known what your new fave is. Misha.
Sure, that's true.
What is Totes your new fave?
So my fave this week is something that originally when I came across them, I did not enjoy. But I've recently sort of gave a second chance. And this week, I'm really, really into. So a few years ago, being, of course, the insufferable hipster that I am, I started getting into really like heavy IPAs and imperial IPAs and double IPAs and all of that stuff.
Okay.
And they're great. And I still love them. But here's the tricky part with those drinks. They are crazy strong in terms of alcohol volume.
Yeah.
They, you know, tend to be 8% minimum. And that means basically every beer you're having is basically having two.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you figure you're drinking, like, say, 2 to 3 an hour, that's 4 to 6 beers in an hour. And you're pretty drunk pretty early.
Yeah.
It's a bummer because, yeah, that is what I'd like to drink. But if I want to enjoy them readily and socially, then, yeah, that becomes an issue. So recently, I discovered the Session IPA. Are you familiar with this at all, Dylan?
I feel like I've heard those two words together before.
So the Session IPA, I was looking it up, and I guess it comes from a time when workers were actually given beer to drink during the day.
Okay.
And this was of an acceptable ABV to provide to workers who still had a shift to complete. So these are IPAs that generally have an ABV around 4%, but always less than 5.
Yes, that's more in line with a normal beer, I guess.
Certainly, yeah. It still maintains the sort of flavor characteristics that you'd expect from an IPA. And I'm getting these from breweries that make my favorite, say, Imperial IPA or whatever. These are just sort of their scaled down sort of brother. So they're still very, very well made. You just don't get super sloshed super fast. And sometimes that's kind of nice.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. You know, I've never been able to drink enough of in a row to really get drunk. Because for me, IPAs are well and fine once in a while, but they're not refreshing at all. Like I don't want to take a big, you know, swig of it and go,
Sure.
If I feel like I need to have a glass of water after my beer, like, I just can't deal with it. And that's how I usually feel about IPAs. So I haven't tried the Session IPA because I was like, hey, I'm sure it's delicious and one would be fine, but I'm not going to buy a 6-pack.
Sure. And, you know, and I can see that could also be the difference between what you want in a desert summer.
Oh, that's true.
Versus what you want on a New England afternoon.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Maybe try them again over the winter. See what you think when it's not so oppressive outside and you're not looking for refreshment, but you're looking for something a little more rich and satisfying.
Gotcha. Have you found a favorite version of this?
There are a couple that I really, really like. One is easier to find than the other, which is crazy, actually, given its provenance. So two of my favorite usual beers, the usual suspects of my fridge where all of the goodies are found, is Six Points Resin and Golden Road's Wolf Among Weeds. Resin is an Imperial IPA. Wolf Among Weeds is just a regular IPA.
How did you discover this new type of IPA?
I had come across them at breweries and whatnot, but usually I wanted something a little bolder than a session IPA, which tends to be lighter. So it was only recently that I gave it a second chance, and it was because I found that Six Point makes one called Sesher, and I was going somewhere where I was kind of concerned about, oh boy, I really don't just want to get super drunk super fast, which is what would happen if I were drinking resin, because those are... I think it's like 9% cans, and it just, they go down so easy.
I don't know
why
people do that to themselves. It just seems awful.
Oh, they're delicious. And Dylan, I'll let you know, being drunk is fun.
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan.
I highly recommend it when you get the chance.
Yeah, I guess just that, I don't know. For some reason, like, I've never been a fan of those big, bold IPA beers. I don't know why. I feel like I'm missing out, but I should try this Sessions IPA, I think, because it might be somewhere in the middle there for me. The absolute lightest and sort of not boldly flavored beer that I will drink would be like a Heineken.
Sure.
So I do like craft brews a lot. It's just the IPAs are always just so much.
So the one that I think was kind of the gateway drug for me was Racer 5. Now, that's one that I have only ever seen once on the East Coast, but you may be able to find some. It was something that I found when I was working like in the Bay Area, and it just was so delicious and still very bold. And, you know, we were living and working crazy hours and whatnot, so the idea of a breakfast beer was fantastic. And this was just so easy drinking, but also bold and citrusy, that it was just so perfect with like a breakfast burrito. I highly, highly recommend that pairing.
It's funny that I was just going to ask, have you ever delved into the world of beer and food pairings, the people who are super into that kind of thing?
I have not gotten super into it. I will say there are certain beer styles or certain beers that I know really well that I might like with a particular food, but I haven't gotten too crazy with it, no. Have you gotten into that at all?
Not at all in my, like, in real life. I went to a tasting once at a restaurant in town where they had a local brewery come in, and then they used their beers in the recipes and then also paired each dish with one of their beers.
Hmm.
And it was interesting. Really, I was just there for the beer. And it was great. I mean, I had a great time, but I don't know that it's the kind of culinary experience I'm going to seek out, or I'm not going to plan my meals around a beer. But that seems to be a huge thing that people do now.
Sure. And I think the availability of more unique flavor profiles than maybe we had in the past enables that in a way that we didn't used to have it.
Yeah, that could be.
There was a time when a nice restaurant would have dozens and dozens of different wines to choose from, but maybe 4, 6 to 8 beers. And I think that that ratio has evened out a little.
I completely agree.
So, dude, check out, and people on the West Coast, especially people in Northern California, where I believe is where it's from, Racer X, or Racer 5, rather. Racer 5? Yeah, Racer 5 IPA. No, they do also make a Racer X, but that is, I believe, the less common and higher ABV version of it. The original, like, Racer 5 is still, like, 7.5%, so it's still getting up there.
Is it Racer 5, like, after Speed Racer? Is that where this is coming from?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Just making sure that I wasn't just making that up. You know what we'll do is we'll put a link to the... to it in the show notes so people can find pictures and go try to find it.
Sure. To people in the Bay Area, you know, go get some Racer 5 and then also get a box of Itzits.
They sell Itzits in Las Vegas.
Oh, really?
Maybe I'll have to like freeze some and send them to you in dry ice.
Yeah, if you can find Racer 5 there, I might have to make a visit. So, dude, a pretty simple one. That is my fave this week.
Oh, I love it. It's making me thirsty. I think I'll have to...
Oh! Huh. I know what else I had to say about it, though.
Oh, please.
So I'm actually drinking one right now. So I started to say, that, you know, the one that sort of got me back into it was the Sesher by Six Point, which is I kind of think of it as like the Diet Coke version of their other IPAs and Imperial IPAs. And Golden Road, which is one of my favorite breweries right now, also makes one that's sort of like the Diet Coke to their Wolf Among Weeds called Wolf Pup. And so it's a very, very similar sort of flavor profile, but with half the alcohol in it.
What is the process they go through to keep the flavor profile, you know, with all the ingredients that require it, but then have the alcohol?
Dylan, you're making me look bad. I have no idea.
All right. I'm just thinking about it from like a chemistry standpoint. I mean, like sure, I mean, if there's less sugar involved, you know what I mean?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
That makes sense.
Part of it is less sugar, and so less alcohol is created.
Correct.
The ABV does tend to increase the calories in a given beer also.
Okay, that would make sense if there was residual sugars there to...
Totally.
To fill your gut. You know what's the best is we're probably totally wrong.
Yeah, you know what I think people really tune in for? Is for us to guess about science.
Well, you know what? For right now, that is my truth. That is how that works.
Sure thing. Enjoy that for the next 30 minutes until you're disproven by Wikipedia.
I can't be disproven if I don't look it up, Misha.
That is true. You can remain blissfully ignorant.
I choose blissful ignorance.
So, dude, what's your new fave this week?
All right, so my new fave is also sort of a simpler fave from the things that we've been talking about recently. It's a TV show, and it's a TV show called Adam Ruins Everything.
Oh, tell me about this. I've been listening to his podcast over the last, like, year or so.
All right, I didn't know he had a podcast.
He does. It is also called Adam Ruins Everything, and the gist of it is that some of the guests that he has on, who talk for maybe 2 minutes or so as an expert on a given subject on the show, maybe on set but off camera, they end up having a conversation that's much more interesting. He has them on the podcast to talk for like 45 minutes to an hour about their area of expertise.
That sounds totally awesome. You're absolutely right. In the episodes, typically there is an expert in a field who does more than just like a voice on camera. And they'll sit down and take a few minutes outside of the structure of the TV show to sort of ask a couple more in-depth questions. And it makes total sense that he would just record a 45-minute piece with each one. Because why that doesn't surprise me is that you can tell that the same depth that he might put into those conversations, they put into all of the things they research for this show. The premise of the show, it actually started on College Humor, which I've never been to. I've never gone to that website. I don't care.
I don't think I have either. I think I've seen a couple things that got passed around from there, but I've never thought, well, let's go see what's on College Humor today.
Me neither. So this guy, Adam Conover, was actor and writer for College Humor. And one of the web series that he put together was called Adam Ruins Everything. And the basic premise is that it's sort of like a comedy / educational show where he takes on the things that we take for granted in American society and he ruins them. And by ruin them means exposes the truth about, you know, is this thing really important as we think it is?
Yes. The first time that I encountered this show was a clip of it that I saw somewhere, or maybe it was a condensed version. I'm really not sure. It was maybe 4 to 6 minutes. And it was him and I believe Rhea Butcher and somebody else in a fake courtroom.
Yes.
Talking about the idea of frivolous lawsuits. Did you ever see this one?
I believe I have. Yeah, Rhea Butcher plays his sister.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So I was fascinated by learning some of the information about the classic McDonald's hot coffee lawsuit and how reasonable the expectations were from the injured woman, but they were just denied and denied. So she ended up having to ask for more and more.
Right, before it was taken seriously.
Right. And there was, I think, more to it than just that. But the thing that I found fascinating was originally she just wanted them to pay her medical bills.
Yeah.
And then it became this huge, huge thing. But since then, there are so many lobbyists and things who promote the idea of the frivolous lawsuit. So that people feel shameful, or they feel like people who sue for damages are just greedy and opportunistic and don't have a legitimate claim.
Right.
Now, that's a tough thing to square with the idea of maybe we do have an overly litigious society sometimes.
Yes.
But there is, I think, an expectation of responsibility. And the legal system is sometimes how we assert that responsibility when someone has neglected their responsibility. And the idea that just pursuing something like that has taken hold as a negative tendency.
Right.
And that was deliberately designed, that kind of kills me.
Yeah, he goes into similar big picture for almost every topic he covers. And he does it all through... Here's sort of like, you know, the pattern of the show is he comes upon someone who is either falling victim to or experiencing or likes the idea of one of these sort of American tropes that may or may not be real. Mm-hmm. And then he annoys them with facts. All cited. So like he'll sit there and he'll talk about facts and figures at the top of the screen. You actually can see that he's citing his sources. constantly, which is pretty cool. And they post links to the website, so you can go double check all his work if you want to and make your own conclusions.
Cool.
And then, of course, the person gets super, super annoyed and they start to see the truth because he's ruining this thing that they believed in. Then they get really, really sad, as if like, oh, well, if I don't believe in this, what else can I believe in? All is lost. And then he comes back at the end with like a positive takeaway. Actually, there is something you can do. Actually, this is good for our society, even though it's wrong, or whatever he has to say about it to make you not just despise the world we live in. But it's presented so like lighthearted and fun. He almost has the attitude of, oh, Alton Brown.
Sure. Okay.
I mean that's being quite liberal to Adam Conover. You know, he's intentionally a little annoying and things, but his comedic, matter-of-fact, friendly way he speaks is endearing. And it's a show that Alex and I look forward to watching every week. It's in its second season now. And unfortunately, it's rotting away on True TV. Do you even know about that network?
I do. If I know correctly, like, didn't it used to be like True Crime or something?
Yeah. And then they went to like...
Or Court TV or something like that?
Something like that. And then I think it was sort of reality TV focused for a long time, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong.
But now it's reinventing itself as comedy.
Yeah. So like, I think the show that precedes him is like a practical joke show, like reality comedy. I don't know. I've never watched it because even just the last 2 minutes when it, up on the DVR, I'm like, oh no, have mercy. Absolutely not.
All right. So I think I just got my answer there. How are you watching this, Dylan?
PlayStation View is how I'm watching it. Although the first season we actually bought from iTunes because my wife liked it so much. She's like, you know what? Nope, I'm going to buy it.
Gotcha.
But then we started doing the PlayStation View thing, which is pretty great, I must say.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we pay like $30 a month. They might have raised it to $40, but it's I have so many channels. I have options like True TV. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Anyway, it's a shame that he's rotting away on this network because I think it deserves more exposure.
Sure.
And of course, the answer is, oh, he could do it on the web, but that's where it started and it got him here. So I don't know what he does to bring it more mainstream, but I absolutely recommend the show. It's so fun and enlightening and just made with a lot of heart. So that is my fave this week, is Adam Ruins Everything.
Well, and I've never seen the TV show, but I will sort of second that with a recommendation for his podcast on Maximum Fun, also called Adam Ruins Everything.
Awesome.
Cool, dude. So Dylan, we've both been uncharacteristically brief this week. So since we have some time, I have a listener fave that I'd like to share, if I may.
Oh, really? Yes, I want to hear all about it.
So we always talk about the ways that people can get their faves to us, like Twitter or Instagram or email, or we have our voicemail number. This one was recorded directly into my phone by my daughter. But it's real, real cute, and I think you'll enjoy it.
All right, here we go. Let's hear it.
Hi, my name is Ridley, and my new fave this week is Darude Sandstorm because it's a very active song, and I really like it, and it's really fun, which is really why I like it. So that's my new fave this week, and that's basically all.
She's the best, man.
She is pretty cute. And there's something that I just think is wonderful about my 9-year-old daughter loving a song that 21-year-old me kind of loved,
okay,
too.
Okay, what song is this? What, Sandstorm?
Sandstorm by Darude?
What?
So, Dylan, I will be stunned if you've truly never heard this before, but I'm kind of stunned that you can't recognize it by name and don't just know it. If you look in your messages, I just sent you a link to it. Check it out.
Okay, all right. Connecting... Pressing play.
Skip to 25 seconds in.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. I've heard this song before.
Yes, you have, because you were alive in 2001. Everyone has heard this song before.
I guess I just never realized it had a name and was written by a person. It just...
Yes, its name is Sandstorm, and that person is Darude.
Well, you know me. I'm not so much into the straight electronica.
That is true. But that song was kind of a beast, no matter what you were into.
I just love the editor's notes in Apple Music. It's a quintessential snapshot of trance circa 2000.
That is 100% true. Oh my goodness. So this leads me into something that I think is really cool, but haven't really like dived deep enough yet into to really declare my fave.
Okay.
So Dylan, you're not into electronic music the way I am.
No, I appreciate lots of music that have electronic elements. Like I'm a sucker for like an indie band with a female vocal lead and a synthesizer. Count me in all day, every day.
Right.
But when it comes to straight electronica at, you know, 120 or 140 beats per minute all the time, not for me.
Yeah, and I have always enjoyed that. But one thing that I've always found difficult with electronic music in particular is the specificity of subgenres.
I guess that is true. There's all sorts of words from people use to describe that type of music, and I can't follow. Have you spent enough time with electronica to be able to like differentiate by hearing which one is which? Because I can't.
In some broad categories, absolutely.
Yeah, because okay. Well, tell me more.
Sure. So if we take Darude Sandstorm as an example, that is totally trance in late 90s, early 2000s. But then you take something like Groove Jet by Spiller. And that's totally house.
All right, so what is...
You can get to things like the Chemical Brothers, and that's big beat.
Back with another one of those block rocking beats.
These are all genres that I like.
Walk me through what makes Sandstorm trance music. Is it the fact that it has the repetitive single line melody? Is it the tempo? Is it what? Tell me.
Sure. It is definitely about the tempo. It's also about sort of the instrumentation and the pace at which it builds.
Okay.
Those are important elements of trance where it is always sort of driving. There are often kind of periods where it'll sort of break down and it sounds like the sort of thing that people wanted to listen to while they were staring at pretty lights.
Yeah, I was just going to say, is it just music to take drugs to? Because that makes sense to me. I guess.
Sure, that is how it came to...
Sure.
That is how it became popular. Now, Dylan, I gotta tell you, I am listening to a lot of trance these days, and I'm not doing a lot of hard drugs, so it is entirely, it doesn't depend on them, but sure, that is where the music came from, I guess. But here's the thing, man. So some broad genres like trance or house or electro or big beat, like, yeah, I can totally recognize those. But it's when we get to stuff like progressive house or deep dish tech house. What is that?
Deep dish.
I don't know. Like tropical house is one that came out in the last couple of years. And I understand what they mean. Like it's a particular sort of instrumentation that's being used that sounds a little calypso-y. But... It's all very, very confusing. So even some music that I love, I'm like, I had no idea I was listening to progressive trance right now. I just knew that I was listening to Tiesto or whatever. There's this site that I have just barely started scratching the surface of called everynoise.com.
Huh.
Its actual title, though, is Every Noise at Once.
Real quick, I just want to back up for just a second. So Tiesto is progressive house.
Oh, I don't know.
Progressive, whatever. Okay.
He's more trance.
Okay.
Tiesto is more trance.
The DJ scene in Las Vegas has absolutely taken over. And
sure.
I know nothing about it. I feel so completely disconnected. It's what makes me feel old now. It's because like, oh my gosh, I was out with my friends last night. We went to go see DJ so-and-so. And I'm like, that was probably a good show. But I don't know anything. I'm just like, wow,
me about that, I moved to Las Vegas in 2000. And at that time, I was coming from Australia. I was really into like the British DJ scene. And I get to Las Vegas where all anyone wants to listen to is hip hop.
That was true. That's how it was. Yeah.
And so I came from Sydney, where I was listening to like all these like great DJs and dance music and all of that stuff. And no one else wanted to no clubs would play that. And I'm in this city that is just filled with clubs. I'm freshly 21 and none of them will play the music I actually want to hear.
And now that's all there is, man. And those guys are getting paid $250,000 a night.
Right.
It's absurd.
Smash cut to 15 years later where I'm an old man with kids and stuff and I just don't care to go to clubs and now everything they have is made for me.
I've never been to any of those nightclubs in this city and
sure,
I don't know that I would feel like I belong at any of them because I wouldn't know what the main draw of the place was. I don't like loud noises. I don't like that kind of music. I don't like $15 drinks. But I also feel like it's a huge cultural thing that I'm missing out on. And what kind of human being am I if I just let that kind of stuff pass by without at least trying to understand it? You know what I mean?
So I'll tell you, like when I was like 18, 19 and stuff and going to clubs in Sydney, what I loved about it was we would go out and stay up all night and we'd walk around whatever was open after we left the club and we'd go back to someone's place and we'd play 1080 snowboarding or Gran Turismo or something.
Right.
Until we all eventually just had to go to sleep. And that's something that obviously I'm not going to recapture now by going, but that is something that that was a huge part of the experience, where it wasn't just the expensive drinks and loud music. That was something, but that led us to further bonding as friends and whatnot. There was a really cool movie that came out around that time called Human Traffic. It's a British kind of indie movie.
Okay.
That was our aspirational movie for what we wanted to be as a circle of friends.
So I have a question. How did your daughter get into this?
That's a great question, right? I have no idea. But she listens to some incredible music, dude.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of it is coming from video games that she's playing. I told you before about Geometry Dash. Geometry Dash has a great soundtrack.
That's the rhythm platformer we talked about, like the endless
right,
running platformer.
Yeah.
Okay, we talked about that. Yeah, okay, I remember now.
Yep, and I think what she's been doing is listening to that music on YouTube, which then just links to the next suggested track, which is that kind of music.
Gosh, do you know what game she would really love is Rez. Did you ever play Rez on PS2?
No.
It's good. It's on PS4. You can pick it up for her. It's also in VR, which is completely like mind-melting experience. But it is a game where the action and the music are incredibly intertwined. Basically, you're like a flying shape. Sometimes you're like just a little sphere. Eventually, if you're doing well, you become a whole like wireframe human. But as you are going through and destroying enemies, each blip and explosion sound becomes the track.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, so as you're playing, it's like you hit the first four enemies and now you have the first couple dots of a melody that slowly start to emerge as you go further and further into the game. But it's like a trance, like wonderland of a game.
Sure.
It's amazing. Even without VR, it's stunning. You should absolutely pick it up.
That sounds pretty cool. Similar, but at a much chiller pace. Did you play Flower?
I loved Flower.
Have you picked it up for iOS yet?
No, because I played it twice. Played on PS3 and PS4.
I played it on PS3, I think PS4 and Vita, and I bought it day one for my iOS devices.
How nuts is it?
And I'm playing it again.
So how crazy is it that game company, by which I actually mean the name of the studio, they call themselves That Game Company, who made Flower, which was amazing. They made Flow, which I don't know if you ever played Flow.
I don't think I did do that one.
And though. Journey.
Yep.
Okay.
It was the first game I got for my PS3.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a great... I replayed it maybe last year, and I was like, damn, it still holds up. It's so good. To anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, this studio called That Game Company tries to make games that explore other emotions than what you typically find in a video game. Like, they're not going to make you excited or feel triumphant or even feel good about yourself necessarily. Flow was kind of a sad game where you, through the progression, my interpretation was that you sort of become the things that you feared. They're really, really talented. And their next game is just for Apple TV, at least at first, which is crazy. What's it called? Do you remember?
Sky.
Sky. Yeah. It looks like a little piece of each of those experiences they've done so far. I'm really excited about it, man.
So, oh man, I agree. So, Dylan, you and I have talked about my love for my television, which verges on inappropriate. I have one of the last of the Panasonic Viera plasmas
yes.
in my basement. And I am a big fan of plasma TVs. I think they look great, right?
They do. My main TV is a 51-inch Samsung plasma. I mean, I want to get a 4K set, of course, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But for the things I use it for, like playing games, you just can't beat that refresh rate. It's the best.
Fair. So I have been rewatching Daredevil season one on Netflix in preparation for Halloween because I want to do the season one Daredevil for my Halloween costume.
Oh, I was just about to ask what you wanted to do for Halloween.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. It's season one Daredevil.
That sounds great.
So the black outfit with the black over the head, because I think it'll look cool. So that's what I'm doing. And so I've been going and rewatching it to sort of pick up on the details of what I need to get and all of that. Now, it's a pretty dark show, so I put a lot of this blame on the show, not my TV. But all the same, I was like, you know what? Let me calibrate this. So I got out the THX app and airplayed it to my TV. And I just recently had done this on my two other televisions because when I was deep in my Baby Driver fever, I had to make sure that I was watching it as was intended. So I calibrated the TVs for it.
I have spent more hours of my life than I will admit to anyone trying to make my TV look the best it can. All of them.
Sure.
THX app is usually where I start, right?
Yep.
And it works great for what it is. It's a very clever idea of a way to take advantage of the accurate sensors that are in cell phones these days.
Yes.
And use that as a guide for adjusting things like color and contrast. It's amazing. It's free. Just search for THX on the App Store. It's like the greatest thing.
Yeah, THX TuneUp is what I was using.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. If you're listening to this and you have a TV, do that.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
But dude, here's what happened. There's one of the first controls that you adjust is the brightness. And this was the one that I was really in there to find out about. There are 9 boxes that go across the screen in kind of a 9-step gradient, right?
Yep, yep.
Going from white to very, very dark gray. I could not see numbers 5 through 9 until I turned my brightness all the way up. And even then, I could barely see like the outline of the numbers. I could not see the boxes. So basically, my beloved Viera is on her way out.
No.
And no. So I am, and that's a bummer, but that does, that gives me a reason to move into 4K.
I probably would have done it already, honestly, with the way that deals are these days on TVs. I saw a great Roku TV on sale today with 4K HDR for $400. For like, you know, 55 inches.
Well, and that's what I was looking on the Wirecutter.
Yeah.
Their pick was like $600 to $700.
Yeah. My only issue is that for me, it's also buying a new receiver because I do run everything through an AV receiver. And while mine is 4K capable, it is HDMI 2.0, not 2.1 or 2.2, whichever one is the requirement for HDCP content over 4K, which means that things like Netflix wouldn't work over through my receiver because there's not enough copyright protection for it. So I got to add $400 to whatever I'm going to spend for a new receiver. And that has held me back.
I hadn't thought of that.
It's held me back.
Sure.
Because once you get used to having uncompressed audio from Blu-rays and games, you can't go back to like an optical connection with 5.1. Just not going to happen. Not for me.
Sure.
I'm a snob about only a couple things in this life, but damn it, that's one of them.
Dylan, that is the snobbiest thing I've ever heard you say. I understand where you're coming from, but oh, hot damn.
So, hey, your daughter is into trance. That's cool.
She's into trance. It's pretty cool. There are far worse things for her to bring home from the internet or from the schoolyard, so I'm pretty happy with it.
Absolutely true.
So, Darude Sandstorm.
I don't know how we got off on that tangent, but it was fun.
I don't either. But yeah, everynoise.com. Just go and click on whatever the name is. So, you know, Electro Tech House or whatever. And it will play you a sample of what does this actually mean. It's a really neat tool.
Is it only for the type of music that I'm, you know, being overly generic with by saying like electronica? Or is it all types of music?
It is all types of music.
So all those crazy weird like indie genres and rock genres I can explore as well.
I'm scrolling through here and I'm seeing it's all presented sort of like a tag cloud of just words.
Okay.
But here, a grouping is country dawn, deep soft rock, Slovak pop, deep classic garage rock, Canadian pop, glam rock, Norwegian indie.
Wow.
Rock with a W.
Wow.
Portuguese rock, Texas country, power blues rock, Swedish folk pop.
Swedish folk pop?
Yeah, it is a huge... Oh, here we go. I scrolled down a little bit further. It is analyzed for 1,536 genres.
Wow.
Yes.
Holy cow. I got to check that out.
Yeah, so everynoise.com. Really, really wow. Neat.
That reminds me that there actually is some Swedish folk pop that I like. I found some band that has like a 1-3-song EP, and it's like in my iTunes library all the time. Called Raymond cool. and Maria. Check it out if you like want to know a little bit more about who I am as a person.
Raymond and Maria. All right. Cool, cool, cool.
Which is like a band of like six people named after characters in a story or something like that. Like a Belle and Sebastian type move. Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, Dylan, what do you say we call this one?
I think it sounds good, man. Although it is Monday right now when we're talking, I did not yet watch Star Trek from yesterday.
Oh, well, I better let you get to that.
I know. I know. It's so unlike me. So I'm gonna go ahead and make some dinner with my wife and watch Star Trek.
How's Discovery going? You liking it?
It's good. I mean, I've only seen two nights of it so far. Like tonight will be night three. It definitely is darker. There's a lot of mysteries already to unravel about who some of these characters are, but it's too early for me to criticize it, but I think it's great. I mean, it's Star Trek, right? I'm bought in. They could have made anything and I would have been all for it.
Sure thing. Cool, man. So here's all the stuff, right?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So you can do show notes, old episodes, and more at totesmynewfave.com.
Yep.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at totesmynewfave in both of those places. You can like us on Facebook. We're totesmynewfave there. If you want to give us a call, the number is 620-603-1024. 1024, good buddy. And if you want to email us, we are totesmynewfave@gmail.com. Also, remember, one of you can still be the lucky first reviewer on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. Go and rate and review us there. It'll be really, really cool.
Is it cheating if we go and review our podcasts as the first reviewers? I mean, it'll be obvious because we both use our real names online, so everyone will know it's us.
That's true. That's something that reminds me of something I've been meaning to say. Like, if you wanted to follow us individually, I'm at Misha St. Clair everywhere, and you're
correct.
At Dylan Kenny everywhere.
Hard to find us. At all.
No, not at all. But I don't want to go and and I even thought, do I want to have Violet, who is my wife and pretty cool, do I want to have her go do it on my behalf? And that feels equally scummy, if not worse.
Yeah, I think if you're going to like cross that line, just do it yourself. You
know? Right. And I don't think I should do that.
Well, then yes, you could still be the lucky one.
You can.
And we'd appreciate it. All right, Misha.
I hear there might be a prize. There's totally not a prize.
There's not a prize. Misha, it was wonderful to talk to you this week, my friend.
Always a pleasure, dude. Talk to you next time.
Take care, buddy.